From KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters. This episode is a compilation of conversations between two private investigators in the state of Vermont. As they drive together, they talk about their experiences with the criminal justice system, and some of those discussions include frank descriptions of violence, crime scenes, and dead bodies. So just keep that in mind. All right, enjoy the show.
We're sitting where she killed the caseworker. It's on this street, and it's amazing to me.
I'll show you where it was. I mean, it's kind of insane, but I'll drive you around the back. So this is where she was, and this building right here. So she freaked out, drove over to her family's house that had made all these phone calls about her, and then in a completely psychotic state, drove over here, pulled into this parking lot, parked right here, and waited. She parked right here. And here's a rehab gym, and DCF is up in here, and she just waited. She just waited right here for the worker to come out and then turn the car off and ran across the parking lot with a gun and just took her out right there. And
this is the caseworker that was in charge of her case with her daughter.
Yeah. And part of it was that the child was being returned to go be brought up by the father, who had been super abusive to her. And nobody had actually looked into him, but was just instead kind of giving this 8-year-old back to this guy. And so part of her trauma was like, this is what happened to me as a child. So she completely lost it. There's just this unbelievable shaming that goes on around victims of trauma, where they're kind of like, why can't you get your act together? Why can't you just stop using? Why can't you parent? Why can't you stay clean? Why can't you hold a job? Why do you have like histrionic fits? And, you know, I was just saying to this lawyer today, like when it's hysterical, it's historical. And it's true. It's like when people aren't able to emotionally regulate, when, you know, I refer to it as like, you know, something gets shattered. I picture it like a little piece of a mirror that gets shattered very early on, and all the light that hits it sort of refracts out sideways. You can only see so many pictures of people's arms blown off and brains splattered and feet that have, you know, turned purple and white, dead bodies. I mean, there's only so much of that that you can do day in and day out without either hardening or getting completely despondent and pulled under by it. And
but do you think that you're actually, this is really stupid, but will you pull over here for a second and stop the car? Or just turn the car off for a second. What's on your mind?
You know, just you asking these questions makes me have to really reflect on how this work really has deeply affected me. And, you know, my family keeps asking me, like, why don't you do a different job? Like, why don't you, you know, if you were working in a flower shop or if you were teaching kindergarten, it would be challenging, but like, it wouldn't be challenging on this level. And why are you so drawn to this level of, you know, sort of hyperbolic life suffering? Like, why are you in and out of jails like 4 or 5 days a week? Like, why are you doing this work? And I guess after you've been doing it for like almost 20 years, you start to understand the patterns and you start to understand the questions, and you actually get really good at connecting the dots and figuring out the narratives. And I guess I actually really love my job. I just have to figure out how to survive it. And I have to figure out how to not be consumed by this sort of world sorrow, and what we do to each other.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about...
Follow that thread all the way back.
The podcast about...
The unknown.
There's no town that you can drive through in this state anymore that you haven't done a case in, pretty much, right? So how does Vermont change, given what you know?
I have had this sensation recently where I'm like, ooh, this is worn out. You've actually been to this apartment building 3 or 4 times. I had a really funny thing happen. I had an intern with me working on yet another crack case in Rutland. And as I come up to the door to talk to this guy, this old black dude leans out of the top floor and he goes, "Hey, Susie! Don't I know you from the clubs?" I'm like, oh my God, you don't know me from the clubs. You know me from like the last 6 crack cases because you're always smoking crack and you're always on the list. I had no idea that what I was going to go deep in was rural poverty, crime, addiction, and dysfunction in family systems in the state of Vermont, and why poor, despondent people commit crimes when they're desperate. I never set out to do that. You know, it's a weird thing when the world keeps hiring you to do something that you're good at, but you never really made the choice that that was what you actually wanted to spend your life doing.
What's your baseline relationship to the client that must be there in order for you to do your job well?
I think the basic notion that everyone has been a 2-year-old. Nobody started out in life coming from a place where they were capable of committing this crime. No one, I don't really, I feel like there's maybe been 1 or 2 cases where somebody was just inherently pretty evil, which you could probably figure out why they're 2. But for the most part, most of the people that we deal with have been deeply wounded along the way, mostly as kids. A lot of the contracts that I work on are indigent clients, and all of those cases, pretty much without fail, are people who, again and again and again, you hear them saying, you know, "I didn't want to be some big kingpin," and they look at me and they go, "I just want what you have. I just want what you have. I just want like an apartment. I want to have my kids. I want to have like a nice life. I want to go swimming in the lake. I didn't ever really want to be a kingpin. I just wanted to have like the basics." And so most of the people that you see in the system, that's the case.
How do you, it's been now, I don't know, a month, 2 months now since the sentence?
November, so it was, it was like 3 months.
What's the fallout been for you since then?
I went to see our client the morning after she was sentenced to life without parole. It felt really, really important to just show up. So I went to see her the next day, and she wasn't surprised.
And what was it like for you?
I felt despondent. I felt, I actually went home and just lay down on the floor of my living room, and I couldn't really move. And I felt detached and kind of, I don't know, it was weird. My daughter, who's 14, said, "Mom, I think you've been possessed. I think that she's kind of taken over your mind and your body the last couple months." I'm like, worried. I felt really determined to not go drink tequila, you know. I felt really determined to stay super clear and level-headed and not go down that hole.
How's it been since? Or what's the residual effect?
I've had to put myself at arm's length because I don't know that I can be in the trenches without it having like a huge personal toll on me. I think there is such a thing as vicarious trauma, and I was feeling it. And there is such a thing as compassion fatigue, and I was feeling it. And
hello, this is Susan.
Back in the car, we picked up Lena, who is Susan's daughter.
How would you say her job affects her as a mother?
Well, I think she has a lot of compassion for people, and she also has a lot of ideas about, like, the world and how she's very open with us about her work and what she does.
What's hard about what she does?
Well, I mean, sometimes she takes her work home with her. Sometimes she'll hear something really awful or have to spend all day dealing with people who aren't really generating positivity, and it kind of comes home with her sometimes, and it makes it harder to, like, just be sunny when she comes home, and she's a little bit, yeah, I would just say that.
It's almost like there's the A storyline and the B storyline. So the A storyline is, I actually remember one day in particular when Lena and Raz were in kindergarten, they had this great kind of hippy-dippy teacher, Ronnie, who would build ovens and teepees, and she'd bake maple syrup, and you would get the snack bucket, and the snack bucket would come home with your kid, and you fill it up with a healthy snack, and the kid brings the snack bucket to kindergarten. And there was one day that I was meant to go to this crime scene and deal with blood splatters, and it was like a really, really awful, gruesome murder that had occurred, and they wanted to take pictures and this whole thing. And I'll just never forget assembling the snack bucket and dropping Lena at kindergarten, and everybody's in there like, "Hello, everybody," you know, and everybody's like singing their little song and saying good morning, and they, is that the wrong song? What was the song that Ronnie used to sing at the end of the day?
Clean up, everybody.
To the sheriff.
Yeah.
No, but I just remember there being this, like, wow, I am going to leave this little bucolic little world of fairy houses and elves, and everyone's boiling maple syrup, and then I'm going to get in my car, and I'm going to go to this completely brutal crime scene and measure blood splatters and take photos of blood smears all over the wall of a place that somebody was brutally murdered, and then I'm going to get back in my car and go pick up all these little elves with their snack bucket at the end of their day and try to be sunny. And I feel like somebody's whole life is like weighing on me. And I do feel like there are times when everybody's like selling hot dogs at the lacrosse field in their yoga pants, and they're all like talking really light about this and that, and everything's really goofy. And I'm trying to like volunteer to work my session at the hot dog stand, and it feels so stupid. Some days days, I wonder if I should have been a yoga instructor so that when I came home at night, I could be sunny. I could come in the door and I'd be all these receptor sites of like Zen peace and goodness would be all like replenished. That's just not how it's played out. Instead, I'm always a little late. I'm always feeling a little spread thin. I'm always kind of waking up with a hit list of what I need to accomplish that day, knowing that I probably will get through like a third of it. My kitchen's always got some dirty dishes. There's always a load of laundry that I have to wash again because it's molded in the washing machine because I forgot to put it in the dryer. And I'm okay with that. At this point, I'm kind of like, you get old enough to kind of be like, oh, this is actually my life. This is actually what it looks like. I'm not going to be the Zen mom. I'm going to be me. You know, it's interesting today. I went to the jail down in New Hampshire yesterday, which is the super depressing jail where there's like one main room and then all the cells are off of the room, but there's no movement. There's like nowhere to get out. So you feel like all of these guys in orange jumpsuits are all in this one big room together and they feel like they're at the zoo. I mean, it's like you've taken a bunch of, you know, animals and put them all into this one room and there's nowhere to go and they're never allowed outside. So the air is super stale and it kind of smells like male sweat. And the only thing that they can do is like go in a side room and do like push-ups. And you see everybody sort of spiral down in that place. It's anywhere that they aren't allowed to go outside, it's like they start to spiral down. And when you're in that room, it's an attorney room, there are these windows on the room. So it's your client sort of sitting in front of you and behind their head is this sort of triptych of guys in orange jumpsuits living their lives and like eating their lunch. And I'm looking at them and saying, the offer that's on the table is 30 to life while they're sitting there in the stale air at age 24. And it's like, that reality is just, it's staggering. And so to kind of, I don't know, sort of like follow that thread all the way back, like if we don't deal with what happens to us as we go along, we end up with this like bloody mess of a disaster sometimes, not always, but sometimes we do. And then once that's happened, there's no going back. Like once the horrible crime or somebody's pulled the trigger, you can't rewind that. You can never take that back. And you just sit across the table and there's nothing else to say. It just is what it is. And then you take your notebook and your laptop and you get buzzed out and you walk outside and there's like sun shining and there's a little hawk that flies over and you get in your little car and you go home and you cook dinner. And yeah, and we're all eligible for all of that. I mean, that's the amazing thing. It's like when somebody, you know, suddenly gets diagnosed with cancer and they see this big gaping hole of like, oh wow, I'm mortal. You know, I am like, I'm actually eligible. Like none of us are going to get out of this alive. There's this very funny existential moment of realizing how brief and fragile it all is. And then you're actually just terrified. I mean, I guess when you are working from your deathbed backwards, you're kind of like, what was worth it? Like, where did the meaning come from? Like, what was really worth it?
Susan Randall has nearly 20 years' experience as a private investigator. She lives in Vermont, and so does Erica Heilman, who trained under Susan and considers her her mentor. Erica recorded this piece for us in conjunction with her own podcast, which is called Rumble Strip. Rumble Strip is this really fantastic and unusual show, and Erica is one of the best interviewers working today. I highly recommend you subscribe. You can listen at rumblestripvermont.com, and we also have a link up on our own website, hbmpodcast.com. On our website, we have our entire back catalog of shows, links to our musicians, and our store. And again, we're at hbmpodcast.com. My name is Jeff Entman. I co-edited this piece with Bethany Denton. Here Be Monsters is a part of the Independent Producer Project from KCRW, where Nick White is our editor and Kristen Lepore is our manager. Music on this episode came from The Black Spot. Thanks for listening. More episodes soon. Thank you.